put some on the empty chairs. Okay, come. Atma Tvam Girija Mate Sahachara Prana Shariram Griham Pujate Vishayo Pabhogarachana Nidra Samadhi Stiti Samchara Padayo Pradakshina Vidhi Stotrani Sarvagiro Yadniyat Karma Karumi Tattadakilam Shambho Tavaradhanam. O Lord, may we feel that Thou art the soul of our souls, that it is Thine energy which is functioning as our mind and intelligence. May our bodies be Thine abode, and all our enjoyments be as offerings unto Thee. May our powers and desires be the companions of Thy will, and our lives the instruments of Thy purpose. May our every word be a hymn unto Thee, our every act Thine adoration, our every step a pilgrimage to Thy shrine. And may we realize, O Lord, that all we see is lighted by Thy light, that the universe and all its beings are Thy very self. Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavahimastu Ma Vindvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. May the Divine Being, may the Divine Being suggest and nourish us as a mother and a father. May we have the strength and skill
to study together heart of spirituality.
May no misunderstandings arise amongst us. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Peace, Peace, Peace be unto us all. In my morning's invocation, which I just gave, there is a phrase which has not been translated. May my every word be a hymn unto Thee, and so on. And one phrase has not been translated. May my sleep be samadhi. You're frowning. Well, that's why I'm going to talk this morning.
Oh, good. I'm in the right place.
That's a good start. Anyway, it's with trepidation that I come to you with this topic this morning, because I think we better put that vase on the floor. Because I know how difficult it is to turn your whole thinking upside down. And that's what I'm asking you to do. I'm asking you to turn your accustomed assumptions, thinkings, understandings and education and so on, all upside down. But I had to do it. I came to my teacher, I had to do it. And I'm very glad that I did. because I think it changed my entire perspective on life. And I hope that it will have some effect on yours, at least some. We're talking about what we can learn from sleep. And you know what the Western, before I talk about the Western view, I better put myself on scriptural ground. That's what preachers usually do. They give you scripture first, authority from the scriptures. So we'll have some authority from the Upanishads here this morning. Talking about the states, different states of consciousness of the human being. And the sage of the Upanishad is talking here about the dream state. There are no chariots, nor horses, nor roads. Put yourself in the culture of that time. But he creates chariots and horses and roads. There are no pleasures, joys, or delights there. He creates the pleasures and joys and delights. There are no lakes or pools or rivers, but he creates all of these, for he is the maker. Now, who is this he? Well, come to that. These are from the most famous, the largest and most famous, and probably the most profound of the Upanishads, the Brihadaranyaka. Just as a large fish moves along both banks of a river, so this person moves between these two states, dream and waking. And then it comes to the deep sleep state, a state we would call dreamless sleep, which we have no dreams, we're not aware of any dreams. As a falcon, having flown around in the sky, becomes weary, folds its wings, and makes for its nest, so does this person hasten to that state where he desires no desire and sees no dreams. Going on in that same vein. Now, when in the state of deep sleep, he does not see. Really, he does see. This is the most important part of the lesson. Now, when in the state of deep sleep, he does not see. Really, he does see. For there is no cessation of the seeing of the seer. For the seer is imperishable. But there is at that time no other thing separate from him which he might see. So it is with smelling, tasting, speaking, hearing, thinking, knowing. There is no cessation of the knowing of the knower, for the knower is imperishable. But there is at that time no other thing separate from him which he might know. All right, I'm on scriptural solid ground now, and I can go ahead on my own. The Western view, as you know very well, of sleep is that it is a state in which we rest our body, and if not our mind, at least our body, the senses. Have you ever stopped to think about, have you ever questioned in your own mind from, say, maybe from early childhood, why we go to sleep? I mean, why should tiredness require that I become unconscious or lose awareness of my surroundings? Have you ever asked that question? Why should it be necessary to lose the awareness of my surroundings just because I'm tired? Why don't we just lie down on the floor or on a bed and just keep our present awareness and see the room around us, count count the patterns on the wall. I used to do when I had to take a nap when I was a kid, and I just laid on the bed, I couldn't sleep. I would just look at the wallpaper design. And why don't we do that? We have become so conditioned, so accustomed, so trained to think in the patterns of Western physiology and psychology that we cannot even question them unless we get suddenly jolted into it, which I hope to do this morning, jolt. See, I know that there are people with medical backgrounds here. I know that. And I know that I'm going against the grain. And the medical or Western biological explanation of all this is that the organism is, after all, something which runs on energy, and its energy runs out and runs, gets low, and so it lies down and goes to sleep. And the reason that it goes into a state of unconsciousness is because more of our senses and our more of the activities of our mind and senses can rest in that state than if we kept our eyes open and our ears open and so on and so forth. And sleep is said to be restorative. And why do we dream? Well, there are all kinds of psychologies about dream. There's no agreement, general agreement among Western psychologists and biologists about the meaning of dream or the need for dream or so on. There are lots of experiments, and I'll be going into some of those. If you came this morning thinking that you were going to hear a discourse on what we can learn from dream analysis, I hope you will not be disappointed, because I'm not going to talk about dream analysis. Not very much, anyway. Let me say that what I'm presenting is the Vedantic view of man's experience with sleep. I don't say it's the last word. I don't claim that nothing has ever been discovered in the West about sleep by Western experimenters. I think there is a certain amount of value in analyzing and trying to understand dreams. I'll get into that a little bit later. But the idea that the only thing that we're to learn from sleep is what the dreams tell us, or what the dreams don't tell us, that idea I want to quash. So I'd say, yes, we're going to hear about dream analysis, but not in the way perhaps that you thought we were. Well, the Western view leaves many things unanswered, many questions unanswered, and perhaps you will want to compare what I present to you with the answers that you would provide from a Western biological standpoint. Our view of the need for dream and deep sleep is the quest for freedom. We cannot, in this state of waking, which we call the waking state, the state in which we are fully aware of our sense world and we communicate with each other, what we ordinarily call life. This is our life. This is our world, our waking life. This is where we are. Can you put that chair over there in the hallway? Yeah, over in the hallway. Thank you. Leave room for getting out. Move over a little bit, please. This way. Move over this way. Can you get out? Okay. Here's a chair. I didn't see this. So, as I was saying, it's a question of freedom, the search for freedom. In this state where we are, we cannot experience any kind of real freedom. We know that we are limited by all the physical laws of our body and our environment. I can't jump over the moon. You know, with children's songs and children's games and so on propose impossible things. Why? Because children have a deeper sense of the need for freedom than we do when we grow up. Children are closer to that pristine freedom than we are. And they, by their intuitive sense, create situations which are to us impossible and funny. But the search for freedom makes it necessary for us, after a certain length of time experiencing this sense impression, to say, I'm tired of it all. I want to get out of this. I want to go away from it. This isn't reality. I know instinctively that this is not the ultimately real, because it's not satisfactory. It doesn't give me what I would call reality, which we equate with freedom, or freedom we equate with reality. And so we go to a place where we have a higher degree of freedom. In my dreams, I don't know about you, I hope that I'm not different from you in this respect. In my dreams, I can fall off a cliff and land like this. Right? I can plunge underwater and swim. And I can't do that in the waking state. I'm not that good a swimmer. I can swim underwater. I can have all kinds of adventures that my waking life would never allow me to have. You say, but this is your imagination. This too is your imagination. That's what you don't understand. You don't realize that this waking state also is a kind of imagination. You have become so, we have become so accustomed to calling this reality that the idea that this might not be reality is a frightening to us. It's a shock. It seems impossible. If this world, this waking world, were real, it could never disappear from our consciousness. The Bhagavad Gita tells you that. That which is real never is not, and that which is unreal never is. So, if this world were real as you think it is, how could it disappear for you? How could you not be aware of it for some hours at a time? It's another shadow. It's another dream. That's what the Upanishad is telling us. And I don't hope to convince you of that in one sentence, so I'm going to go on for some more. If I could convince you of that, I would stop right now. Then again, in dream, you see, there are still limitations. You are aware, for instance, of time. Now, in a different way, in the dream state, time changes. You know how people will tell you, I lived a whole month, or I lived for a whole week in a few minutes of my dream. The dream seemed to go on for years, and so on. We know that in dream state, the time sense changes, the space sense changes. We use a different ego. Yes, the dream ego is not the same as the waking ego. It cannot be. The dream ego is oriented toward a different framework. It's oriented toward greater freedom. I have greater freedom of expression for my ego sense in the dream state than I have in the waking state. Still, there are obstacles. I meet unfriendly people. I meet enemies in my dream. I have nightmares sometimes. I meet people I don't want to meet, people who criticize me and so on. So it's not that the ego has complete sway over the dream state. It's not that. But in the dream state, ego has greater scope for its exercise, and it takes on different forms. I have told this so many times, I'm almost tired of telling it. I once dreamed that I was five monkeys at once. I mean the ego sense, the sense of identity in the dream was, I am this mother monkey and four baby monkeys. You think that's impossible? Maybe you don't have those kinds of dreams. I do. I've had that kind of dream, where I identify with something which I am not at all in this waking state. I mean, I wake up knowing that I felt I was that person or that thing. So you see, with the sense of identity, the dream state plays havoc. With the sense of limitation, the dream state plays havoc. And then we become what happens in the deep sleep. In deep sleep, in dreamless sleep, as we call it, dreamless sleep, even the mind has become tired. Even the mind has become restricted by these experiences. It has many experiences in the waking state, it has many experiences in the dream state. But when the mind, that inner organ, becomes truly exhausted, truly tired, it takes on the state of dreamless sleep in which it is not disturbed by any kind of vibration, any kind of experience, visual or oral or any other kind. There is nothing, as he said, let me read it again. Now in the state of deep sleep, he does not see, really he does see, what I have to convince you of, and it took me a long time to believe it, but I finally did, I have to convince you that there is a consciousness, a pure consciousness, which remains as the witness of all these three states. It's called Turiya, the fourth. Not even called a state, but just the fourth. And that is what he's talking about here. What he does see, for there is no cessation of the seeing of the seer. For the seer is imperishable. We call it the Atman, the self with a capital S. But that's, I'm jumping ahead. But there is that, at that time, no other thing separate from him which he might see. All duality has disappeared. All division has disappeared. All otherness has disappeared. One of our Swamis used to say, the definition of mind, mind is the sense of otherness. We are trapped in the mind so long as we have a sense of otherness, something else. And when there is nothing else, then that time the seer simply sees, if you can call it seeing. And so it is with smelling, tasting, speaking, hearing, and talking, thinking, teaching, knowing. There is no cessation of the knowing of the knower. There's no object there to know. Not even another self. Not even the reflection of the self is there in which to call something else. There's no reflecting medium. There's no reflection. If the moon is reflected in a pool of water, the moon can be the subject, analogically. The moon can be the subject, and its reflection can be the object, and there is a medium in which it is reflected. But if there is no pool, if the pool has dried up, then what does the moon, how can the moon reflect in anything? So, there is no cessation of the knowing of the knower, for the knower is imperishable. But there is at that time no other thing separate from him which he might know. And so, I'm going to try to summarize this view, this Upanishadic view, by going to use a diagram, which I think I consider to be a stroke of genius on the part of one of our senior swamis. I had the privilege of sitting in his classes, and when he gave us this diagram, I had an aha experience. I said, Eureka, I found it, and I have used it ever since. Let me put some labels on it. Oh, I'm pinned down, but anyway, I'll bring it over here and label it so I'm not having to stretch. Then I'll put it back up again. You saw these two large circles. Well, this one is me and that one is you. Let's do it that way. I'm putting a W here for waking state and a DR for dreamless sleep, for dreaming, rather, and DS for deep sleep. Oh. Not right. Everybody see? Waking state of our consciousness is a limited thing. I've drawn a circle. Circle has limitations. Everything inside the circle is something, and the other outside it's something else. Same with the dream state, and the same with deep sleep. Now, in the course of 24 hours, we go, I'm going to get over here with you, we go from waking into dream or directly into deep sleep. From deep sleep, we can go to dream. We can also come to waking state without going back to dream. And in the course of 24 hours, we may run these circuits in various ways. Can you picture, can you understand and imagine yourself as the big circle? Outside the states, you, your pure consciousness, your real consciousness.
Is the outside the Turiya?
Yes. I could put that there, Turiya. Pretend I've written Turiya there. And it is not a state of consciousness because this is pure consciousness. Of course, actually, I'd have to erase the whole thing and just have a white board because that would be the pure consciousness. But we have to diagram this somehow. So I'm making circles which are limiting, but actually this is the unlimited self, you see? This is the self which has no limitations. It's pure, pure consciousness, unaltered, unalterable, unchanging, unchangeable, not divided because it is single, homogeneous, there is no second. That is the state of consciousness Buddha called nirvana. That's the state of consciousness we call samadhi. So you see why in the invocation this morning I told you we didn't translate that phrase in the translation that I use, but it says nidra samadhi stithihi. May my sleep be samadhi. Instead of having one of these limited states of consciousness, yes, even this is limited because it comes to an end. Ah, that's a good question. Why do I call the deep sleep state limited? Because you can't stay there forever. You can't stay in that state for a long time. Either dream comes and intervenes, or you wake up, you come to the waking state. So it's still limited. And after all, it's kind of dark, isn't it? Dreamless sleep is kind of seems kind of unconscious. Of course, that's the trick. The state of deep sleep in which you see no dreams is not a state of unconsciousness. This is behind it. This awareness, this self-awareness, the real, the permanent, the ineluctable, is behind that deep sleep state. But because of ignorance, that's another story. Why don't we see this? Why don't we realize this? Why don't, when I tell it to you, why don't you have aha? Because ignorance veils us, covers our understanding.
Then, Swamiji, what is unconsciousness then? What?
There is no unconsciousness in Vedanta.
Exactly.
There is no such thing as unconsciousness. There is, if you use consciousness with respect to the waking state, then we become unconscious when we get bumped on the head. If you use it with respect to the dream state, when we go to the deep sleep state, we are unconscious, not dreaming. But that is not unconsciousness. There is a light of consciousness behind the dream, the deep sleep state, which you are not aware of because you are not there. Ego, now that's a good thing to do. So, put that here. Here is waking ego, dream ego, and here ego is lapsed. It falls flat, like a sine curve. If ego waking state is a multiple curve, multiple vibration, then dream state curve is a sine curve, slower, simpler. In the dream deep sleep state, there is no ego at all. It has lapsed, but it comes back. That's why it's not the permanent reality.
Western understanding, Western viewpoint, an expression of Maya in Western culture is the fact that we limit consciousness to a waking state,
right,
a focus
exactly.
consciousness.
Exactly.
Because in this diagram, the next step would be to erase the two big circles, because finally, by this diagram, where do we get the idea that consciousness is plural?
Hmm. Well, you have to ask yourself that. You have to ask yourself, where did I get this crazy idea that consciousness is plural? Heisenberg and what's the other one? It's not Heisenberg that says that. What's his name? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other one, the German. He says there's no consciousness in the plural. There's no such thing. Science doesn't show us anything called consciousness in the plural. Wherever we go, we find consciousness to be singular.
Well, generally, in the material paradigm, the physical paradigm, consciousness is sort of an epiphenomena. It doesn't really...
Right, that's right.
It's dependent
on the physical brain, on the brain. Yeah.
But and that's basically why. By this, I can see where I have... I see myself as an individual because I choose to see myself as an individual.
Right, I was just about to say that. Did you have a question about...
Yes, what I wanted to ask you was, can coma be called as a turiya state or something like coma?
Coma. No, coma is like deep sleep, unless there's a dreaming. You know, coma. In coma, you go between, as far as I understand, you go between deep sleep and dream, and waking too. Because sometimes you can hear what's going on in the waking state. A person in a coma sometimes is able to hear the conversation in the operating room or wherever he is. You know this, don't you?
Yes.
So coma just means that you're not able to assume your normal waking apparatus, because your mind can go from waking state to dream state to deep sleep just the same. Well, what I was going to say next was that because we take the waking state as our norm, you see, what is normative for us is what our parents and our grandparents and our school teachers and our books and the whole of civilization is included in it, except for this particular revelation. I don't find any place where we do not assume, well, yes, I go to Taoism. I have to accept, make the exception. Chuang Tzu, the wonderful teacher of the Tao. Lao Tzu was his teacher. Chuang Tzu was the disciple. Chuang Tzu has that famous sentence in which he said, "I dreamt I was a butterfly flitting from flower to flower, and now that I have wakened up, I do not know whether I am a butterfly dreaming I am a man, or a man who dreamt he was a butterfly." This is Lao Tzu. So you see, that shows that this is a wisdom which is not exclusive to the Hindus. It's mystical knowledge. It's the knowledge of all the mystics. Whether they spell it out this way or not doesn't matter. We happen to have a doctrine. We happen to have a revelation in Veda that gives us this, but I'm sure mystics experience it when they get to that high state. They experience this truth, whether they put it in this form or not. Now let me go on to dreams. I talked about why we dream. It's a kind of escapism. Yes, good, why not? Why not escape from limitations? See, that's the strange part of it. If psychiatry and psychology tell you this is an escapist philosophy or psychology, I would have every right to turn and say to them, yes, this is a miserable world. I want to escape from it. I haven't found this to be such a great place. And just because you like it here doesn't mean that I have to like it here. And I find a greater sense of freedom when I, well, dream, yes, but more when I meditate. That's the next thing to show. What's that? That's the state of meditation. We can also do that. Why do I have it dotted? Why is the line dotted?
Because it's not bounded, it's boundary free.
Yes, because there's flux and efflux. Osmosis goes on between this consciousness and the self. If you are meditating on the true self, then there is access back and forth. You're not limited by that circle the other three put upon you. You are an agent, free agent, taking the waking ego. It can be done in dream. Those who do a lot of meditation, after some years, they find that they can meditate even in their dreams. So what are they doing here? They're taking the dream ego and putting it into a state where there is osmosis and there is contact with the Supreme Spirit. So, all right, now that we've got all these circles drawn, let's raise this question. Who is it that dreams? You know, in these passages, it just said he, the dreamer. The dreamer does this. He creates roads, he creates chariots, he creates fish and so on. How do we understand this he? Who is this he? Anybody wish to answer for me?
Atman.
Atman? Would you say Atman? We have so many passages which say that the Atman doesn't move, doesn't do anything.
Atman is just a witness?
Witness, yeah. So how can he create dreams? That question. Anybody else have a different answer?
Dream ego.
Huh? Dream ego. The dream ego, yes. All right, the dream ego does this. And is that you? Or me? I mean, do you acknowledge that as yourself?
No. Atman is you. Atman is you.
Atman what?
Atman is me. And
oh,
you.
Oh yes, all right. No, you Atman refuse to. All right, ego. Okay. Well, you're you're enlightened, of course. So.
He's speaking in absolute, and you're speaking in a relative field.
Yeah.
That for us to discuss this,
yeah,
we have to maintain some sort of
right
feeling.
Right.
In the relative world. Otherwise, we cannot even describe all this.
Yes.
Atman is beyond all this.
Right. So, to figure out who is the dreamer is the same, really, the same problem as to ask you who you are. Ask yourself, who am I? Who am I? I know that I am not this 5'5" form Swami Yogeshananda. I know that in reality, in the ultimate, I'm not that. Otherwise, this couldn't be burned or buried or whatever. I mean, I know that I am not going to be burned or buried. You see, that's the trouble. Materialism has to assume that the waking state is the norm, because the identity of self is with this body, this individual, this ego, or this mind. In order not to identify with this, you have to find something else to identify with, and that's what Shekhar is saying, the Atman is our true identity. Yes, if I want to know who I truly am, I go there. So the question, who is the dreamer? Do I dream my dreams? Am I responsible for my... You are as responsible for your dreams as you are for what you do in the waking state, and no more and no less. You understand? Do you follow me? We are as responsible for what we do here as we are in the dream state, in a sense, because we are never the doer. The Gita and all the scriptures, Christian, New Testament, and everything, tells you in the long run, you are not the doer. Lord is the doer of everything. Therefore, there was an Indian, no, he was actually Selenese, Kumaraswamy. Maybe some of you have read the books of Kumaraswamy. He was an artist and a poet and a thinker, a philosopher. And he made this doctrine, the Lord is the only transmigrant. In other words, you think that you are born here again and again, life after life, if you are a good Hindu. And what he said was, the Lord is the only transmigrant. That is to say, this coming and going is the business of the Lord. He is the only doer. He is the only actor. The only one here. But anyway, that's a devotional viewpoint, and we don't have to stick with it too long.
Mm-hmm. And so, is it not the mind rather than any of those ego state that's responsible for the dreaming, that's doing the dreaming?
That's doing the dreaming?
Right.
Yeah. Ego is a function of mind.
What creates the dream state?
Ego is a function, isn't it, of mind as a whole.
Right.
One of the functions. So when I say mind gets tired, it's also say ego gets tired. And remember, Turiya and self are not two different things. We call the self Turiya when we're talking about the three states.
Oh, I see.
In relation to the three states, Turiya is the transcendent, the beyond. Huh?
Right.
But when everything's erased, Turiya is the self. All right.
I have a comment.
Yeah, well, right.
In the relative plane that in which we are using terms to describe all this, you know, like Tom was talking about, could you say that the doer in the relative world that we are in could be called a jiva?
Jiva, right.
Embodied Atman.
And we have another name for it in the dream state. Mm-hmm. The subtle body has a name too, like that. Okay? Now I want to talk a little bit about the transition. The transition from from waking to dream. Are there no intermediate conditions? Yes, there are, and Western psychology has explored those quite a bit. This system is a simplistic one in a sense, because it's talking about the big things, the major states. Isn't there a state when you are half awake and half dreaming? Yes, there are. And you know there are people who even practice what we call lucid dreaming, where you make an attempt to be dreaming and aware that you are dreaming, and so you get control over the dream. This is a case of the waking ego asserting itself over the dream ego. The waking ego suppresses the dream ego, replaces the dream ego, and commands the field and the activity of the dream state. That's what we call lucid dreaming. Let me give you an example of what I mean by the transition. It's really important. I had a friend, this is old hat for some of you, but it's new to many of them. I had a friend who woke up in the morning from a very vivid dream. And in that dream, he was having a philosophical discussion with somebody, maybe more than one person. And in that dream, he had, in the middle of the discussion, the question had arisen in his mind, is this perhaps a dream? And he examined it closely and said to himself, oh no, this isn't a dream, because everything is very logical here. I've been talking logically, they've been talking logically, and everything here has been perfectly logical. And then he woke up. And he looked back at the conversation, which was still lingering in his mind. The conversation was there, the content of it. And he said, it was nonsense. It was sheer nonsense. Now, what is he doing? He's changing his judgment from the dream state to the waking state. See how the dream ego judges differently from the waking ego? That conversation to the waking ego was nonsense. To the dream ego, it made all perfect sense. And you know, when you go to dream, you are not aware, you're not aware that you are dreaming most of the time. And so our teachers like to point to this illustration, that if you could understand right now, in this life, in this, on this day, that what we are doing here is making judgments according to an erroneous system. That we are under the influence of a power of mistake. And if we could wake up from our individualities, our waking egos, and discover the true self, which it's hiding, then we would really wake up. And you know, I have a little pamphlet called Waking Up. It's not for nothing that I called it that. The whole process of spiritual life is waking up from one kind of dream to another, from one kind of ignorant state to a higher state. And so if...
A higher state of ignorance?
Yes. Pardon?
I'm serious. Wait, are you waking from a lower state of ignorance to a higher state of ignorance?
Higher state in ignorance is what I mean. Higher state in ignorance.
Okay.
Then what about Ramakrishna?
I think it's too warm in here. People are fanning themselves. Let me put down...
Ramakrishna's dream?
Would you just turn it... You know how to do it? Just put one down. Poke the lower button once.
Swamiji, how about Sri Ramakrishna's dream about Vivekananda coming in his life?
Now, wait a minute.
What dream state was that?
What was that again?
Okay. Sri Ramakrishna had a dream about Swami Vivekananda before he saw him, that this is in a child form.
Yeah.
And then it became a reality, a spiritual reality also.
Right.
So, what dream state would you put that in?
That's a dream state.
That
is a dream state. Oh, no, you're talking about Sri Ramakrishna's... Now that comes under the heading of visions. And that's another subject. We're not talking visions this morning. We don't have time. Now let me get along here, or I won't get through. I suggest that as spiritual aspirants, we ask ourselves, why do you put so much value on the physical? Why do you account the gross state, the state of this universe in its material form and in its all of those ramifications of matter, why do you consider that to be so valid, so important, so real, so permanent, so normative? And then, of course, I could talk about spiritual dreams, but I think I won't have time this morning. I'll talk about that on some other occasion. Let's go again back to dreamless sleep. This analogy has been used. We are sitting in a theater. We are watching the drama performed on the stage. The audience is the self. The performers are the characters of the dream ego or the waking ego. Let's lump them both together here. We're watching the drama of life in the two respective stages, waking and dreaming. And finally, the last chords of the orchestra have been sounded and the curtain comes down. Now what? Let's say the drama has come to an end. The lights have gone out in the theater. You can't see anything. They're telling you it's time to go home. But you sit there and witness the dark. This is the state of deep sleep. There is a consciousness. You have to call it consciousness. Because that's what's real. And that consciousness remains there witnessing the absence of mentation. Consciousness sits in the dark in the theater witnessing the absence of a drama. But there is no unconsciousness. That is the description given or analogy given. After the curtain falls, we are remaining in the theater. Well, what are the characteristics of the deep sleep state? There is a kind of bliss there. Now, it's very hard to get people to admit this sometimes. The scripture says, the Vedanta text says, you wake up from deep sleep saying, oh, I slept so happily, I slept deeply, I was not disturbed even by dreams, and I feel so rested, and so on. We would explain that as being the result of your freedom from all activity of the internal or external organs. And that freedom has given you the kind of rest that you would like to have. So it's like the deep sleep state is like a lighted lamp in a dark room, not lighting up anything. The ego has lapsed there. It's not a void. It's not an emptiness, because pure consciousness is present. If we had freed ourselves from the trammels of ignorance, the bondages of avidya, we would experience that as samadhi. We would be the light that we describe here. And we would know, in a sense, in quotes, that who we were. We would be self-aware in the truest sense. And that would be the ultimate realization of spiritual life. I'm going to leave more time for questions now and close by saying that this world in which we live, in our waking body, our waking state, is our waking dream. Why is it a dream? Because it comes to an end. You know this drama of life is going to come to an end here. And as a result, religious people make all kinds of plans for meeting their relatives in the next world and hoping that they will survive to on and on in eternity. And because we know this particular drama is going to end, we have all kinds of ways of trying to escape from the experience of death and project all sorts of reincarnation theories and heavens and hells and all kinds of things. But the fact of the matter is that if we could wake up from this waking dream, we would find ourselves here instead of there, and there wouldn't be any need for any more ignorant dreams or dramas. Swami Vivekananda, summarizing all this, said, I only say, awake, awake. Be bold and face the truth. Be one with it. Let visions cease. Or if you cannot, then dream, but truer dreams of eternal love and service free. You see, he had this experience. And then his body and mind and personality were kept in this world for the sake of an agenda, the sake of a mission. His teacher, Sri Ramakrishna, said, Mother will not let you go until you have finished her work. Divine Mother will not let you go until you have finished her work. And when he was coming near to the end of his life, he wrote to Joe McLeod, Now I am just a boy at the Master's side, at his feet. My dreams are coming to a close. Behind my work was ambition, behind my purity was fear, behind all these things he attributes to his relative being, because he had to dream higher dreams of eternal service, eternal love, and service free, which he carried out until his work was over. He knew it was a dream. He knew that it wasn't real in the highest sense. Therefore, he could be free to avoid the ups and downs of life. He could meet it with serenity because he knew what it was. And I'm suggesting to you that if we go sufficiently far through the meditative circle, we will hopefully arrive at that same realization that Swamiji had. If you cannot give up all dreams and be one with this Samadhi spirit, then go ahead and dream, but make your dreams more loving, more serviceful, and so on. Now, I'm sure you have a lot of questions, so fire away.
Stillness occurs in a meditative state when one is aware of awareness. I mean, is that the type of thing you're talking
about? Yeah. Yes. That's what we're to do. We're to be aware of our awareness, because our awareness is the essence of our being. It's inerasable, it's unending, and no beginning, and it has no place to go. It's just there. And it is filled with bliss, filled with joy, filled with being, filled with in knowledge. Yeah.
Swamiji, before, if we try to, you know, see the Western way of looking at it differently, even in the Easterners, a caution has been drawn. For example, Lord Shankara himself, the yogi, when he was in deep sleep, then Cupid could come and throw a piercing arrow at him, mm-hmm. which woke him up. Mm-hmm. There are so many sages yeah. that in a deep sleep called Samadhi, yeah. they were disturbed and aroused by the worldly desires. To that extent, the perforated lines that you've drawn is significant, because those three things which are there, they can come there too. The meditation can expand to flatten out the ego, but the ego can insinuate and sneak in and disturb your samadhi too.
Yeah, but that means they're not completely there, because Sri Ramakrishna, look at Sri Ramakrishna. They poked his eyes, they pulled him, they put, looked in his mouth, and they raised his eyelids, and they blew in his ear, and tried to make him shout it in his ear, and he couldn't wake him up from thing. He had complete absence from sense of awareness. Nothing could wake him up until somebody came with a particular mantra, and now could, there you have it, you see. He could be brought down by a mantra. But he said that if a person gets into that state, that final state, 21 days his body may last at the most, and then he's gone. So during those 21 days, some sages might be wakened up. Others might not. You're talking about the ones that you know of that could be wakened up. How many do you know of? How many have you seen? You haven't seen those who have gone off into the forest and nobody could wake them up. So you don't prove anything by that. All you prove is that all you can say is he wasn't in complete absorption. You accept my argument? He wasn't in complete absorption. Otherwise, the alarm. When we go to deep sleep, where our sleep is not really that deep. Otherwise, the alarm clock wouldn't wake us up.
Swami, then you just talked about nirvikalpa samadhi.
Yeah.
So in that state, if you are, you can last for only 21 days, and if nobody wakes you up by mantra or something, you are gone.
Yes. Yeah. That's what Sri Ramakrishna said. I can't prove it. That's, I'm telling you what he said.
I'm closer to samadhi on Monday morning.
How?
It takes longer for the alarm clock to
wake me out. Oh, I see. Well, yes. All right, you can say that. We'll allow you to say that.
How can you categorize yoga nidra in your circle?
Yoga nidra?
Yeah.
Yoga nidra, well, that's a state in which you're trying to meditate. Huh? You're trying to meditate. And for a few minutes or a few seconds, the ego crawls, slips over into here instead of into here. And you feel sleepy, and blankness comes. We're told to avoid that. See? In a sense, you could call it yoga because you're getting closer to the pure awareness. But if you're sleepy, the ego is lapsed and you're not having awareness. It's an in-between state. I told you there are things in between in all these things. This is an in-between.
What is the state of the ego in the meditation circle?
Well, how's yours? Whose ego? Who's mine or yours?
Is meditation a state, or is, I thought it was a technique?
No, it's not. I'm showing it as a circle, but it's not a state. It's a special way of using the mental functions, special way of using the mental functions with a particular object in mind, but it's not a state like these states, because it's done from the waking state. Unless you're in the dream, you can dream that you're meditating. Oh, that was an interesting thing. Why did I draw two? Psychic phenomena. What are psychic phenomena? My dream and your dream get together. That's my famous story. I have to tell you that famous story. I was in the barracks during the Second World War. I was in a long barracks, and we were all lying out in rows, and there were two fellows who worked together on the same project, and they were just like twins. They're always together, you know. They talk together. They were hardly ever separate. But they slept at separate, on opposite ends of the barrack. Well, it wasn't too long a barrack. I'm exaggerating. And one morning, early in the morning, we heard Joe talking to Harry as if they were awake. And neither of them was awake. They were both asleep. And they were dreaming the same dream and kind of carrying on conversation in the dream state with each other. So, and everybody in the barracks heard it and knew, was aware of it. And woke up and had the most astonishing experience. So you see, there is not only oneness for us in the self. We all not only have the same Atman ultimately, but we also sometimes have the same dream state. And the same, not we have the same waking state here, but we can have the same dream state. And I dream of you, you dream of me, you can corroborate it. And in the deeper sleep state, there aren't any of us. I don't even know you or myself, I don't know nothing. The worm, the boar, the gnat, the scripture says, the worm, the boar, the gnat, the human being, the saint, the sinner, the yogi, all merge into darkness in the deep sleep state. When I'm in my deep sleep state, there's where you are too. Because that's all I know of you, is what I get in the waking state and the dream state. Well, any more questions? Yeah.
Question and a thought. in the meditation state, in that circle, couldn't you also draw a dotted line to all the other circles?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are in, if you are regularly meditating, that your consciousness changes so that your waking state, your dream state, and I would postulate even your dream sleep, shift to a different state of consciousness. Would that be accurate?
Julia, I don't think so, because there have been experiments with hypnosis, which is a variation on the waking state, in which they have discovered that there it is, has no relation to the dream state at all. So if meditation is a variation on the waking state, I think it has to be considered as isolated from dream or deep sleep. Now, if you are meditating and you get sleepy, you don't mean that.
No, I was meaning more over time. If you are a meditator and you've been meditating for 15 years, doesn't the practice of meditation
affect
impact?
Oh, yes, that's true. That's right. But that's because your waking ego changes,
right,
and your dream ego changes in conformity to it.
Right.
That's not because you're going from meditation to the dream state.
Right, but I was...
You see what I mean?
Yes,
see what I mean?
I
because I used to think hypnosis was a sort of a dream state, but they've found out that it's completely isolated from dream. You cannot make a connection between them. Any more?
You were saying that we share the waking state?
No,
well...
I mean,
but he said also the waking state. But we feel we are separate from each other in the waking state, so perhaps we couldn't really say we are sharing it.
Well, maybe that's a sort of a semantic problem, isn't it? You mean you don't call that sharing?
Well, to a degree, I guess.
Yeah, that's all I meant, of course. I can never be completely you in any of these three states, but I can communicate with you. What I'm trying to say is we can communicate in dream just as we can communicate in the waking state. We can't do any communicating down here.
Eknath Ishwaran, you know, he makes a point which is very much related
to
what you are saying.
Yes.
What?
And he says we are not making enough progress in our sleep because we do not sleep in the right way. What is called sushupta avastha, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's where, through the meditations and everything, you have prepared your mind in such a way
mm-hmm.
that even during the sleep time, dreamless or dreamless, you will continue to make spiritual
yes,
progress.
Yes, but more important...
I mean, it applies to the waking state, too.
Exactly
what you were talking
thing.
About.
Yeah.
Yes, but the important thing here is, contrary to Western psychology, which tries to improve mankind by working through the subconscious or the unconscious, we say this is to be done through the conscious mind. It's to be done by working on our conscious ability to employ our mental resources on our conscious mind and not subterranean, sub rosa with the subconscious or the unconscious mind. And I don't know what Ishwaran said, but I think he meant that we influence our dream by what we do in the waking state. So it's in the waking state that we have to do spiritual progress. We can't ask the psychiatrist to analyze our dreams and think they were getting spiritual progress. Okay. Are there any announcements? Let me see. There we have some visitors here. Let's see. Wait, Rebecca, you haven't met this group. Rebecca is here, and your friend is Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, and you've been here before, yes. I guess everybody else has been here before. Okay. Oh, no. Have you been on Sunday before?
Yeah.
No, Elizabeth. I'm sorry. Elizabeth's first time on Sunday. She's been coming to Arati, but first time here on Sunday. So please make these friends welcome and get acquainted with them. And let me see, I think I had another, oh yes. I'm not going to say this very often. I may be the last time I say it, but we have in our newsletter put out a notice that we are going to have membership for the center, and the details are there. And all I want to add to it is that it will make a difference in our future, I think, I'm sure. And so I'm just making a personal suggestion that those who are able to do so conscientiously may become members of the center. And that's about all I'm going to say about it. Oh, yeah. Well, I guess I've run out of forms. I'll have to wait until we can get them duplicated.
I made some extra
forms. Oh, you have? Oh, okay, thank you. I'll get them to them. Well, let's say our benediction then. Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in the sky, on the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace in the sky, on the earth.
Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees.
Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees.
May the gods be peaceful.
May the gods be peaceful.
May the whole universe be pervaded by peace.
May the whole universe be pervaded by peace.
Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being.
Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being.
Oh. Shanti, shanti, shanti. Om, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere.
That's very good there. Merci.
This lady over there is from anesthesiology. He's the pathologist.
I remember having seen
I hear you.
We have neither dreamlessly nor dreamlessly.